From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening to this special edition for the 2025 Wilmington City Council election. This year, there are three open seats on council, and we have eight candidates, including six challengers and two incumbents. We also have three candidates for mayor, including our incumbent mayor. While the city council race is technically nonpartisan, the local Democratic and Republican parties do play a role in supporting candidates. And for city council, we have three Republican candidates, one unaffiliated candidate, and four Democratic candidates, although the county Democratic Party implemented a straw poll to narrow its support to just three of those candidates and one of the two Democrats running for mayor. And we'll have information on all of that on our show page. On today's show, we're interviewing Republican challenger Billy Craig, who is running for mayor of Wilmington. Craig is a veteran law enforcement officer who has worked with the Wilmington Police Department and the FBI, and is currently a realtor and a licensed private investigator. We'll ask him a host of questions drawn from listeners and readers and our community agenda program. We'll also ask what he would do with the office of mayor above and beyond what a city council member could do. All right, Billy Craig, candidate for Wilmington mayor. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
So before we get into some of the policy questions, I just want to give you a chance to tell people a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Billy Craig. I was born and raised here in Wilmington. My parents were born and raised here as well. I'm married. I've got two girls, 18 and 20. I worked for the Wilmington Police Department. My last career, I worked for the Wilmington Police Department for 30 years, or I have 30 years of credible service. I worked Morton Street, worked warrants, so I went out and arrested people, made about 4,000 arrests in 3 years, never had to shoot anybody or, you know, do anything crazy. I'm always grateful about that. Spent my last, probably from 2000, October 2000, until I retired, I spent everything in investigations. My last 15 years, I worked with the FBI, working the Joint Terrorism Task Force. I worked international domestic terrorism matters.
All right, and one of the first questions we get every time a face would pop up on the New Hanover County Board of Elections website was, what party are they affiliated with? So we're asking every candidate if they're affiliated with a party, which party, and why.
I am affiliated with the Republican Party. I do have conservative ideals. I will tell you right now, and probably don't know, many people know this about me, I've never voted a straight ticket myself. I do look at the candidates. I do look at what they're doing. Why pick the Republican Party? I think they're more aligned with my thinking. And plus, there's already two candidates for the Democratic Party. And, you know, going in on three ways probably not going to be very beneficial. So it was a little bit of strategy there as well.
All right, let's get into it. The first question we hear from almost everyone out in the community when we talk to them is about affordable housing. So curious, what do you think the city could be doing on this? Anything that they're doing now that you like, things you think that they shouldn't be doing, things you think that they could be adding?
Well, I'm still looking for a definition of affordable housing. I keep hearing, and again, I'm not a politician. This is my first time doing this. No one has been able to tell me what affordable housing is. You know, you have workforce housing, okay? Workforce housing, let's look at Sunset Park. That was workforce housing. That most of Sunset Park was built at the end of the 30s to care for a lot of the workers working down the shipyards building the Liberty ships. And then, you know, Moffett Village, the old Longleaf Park, that was a lot of returning people from the war. What is affordable housing? Where, you know, how are we going to tackle that? You can try and attract businesses here to try and, you know, give them, you know, ideas of, hey, you know, let's get people more money in their pocket. A lot of times it causes, you know, an increase in the whole supply and demand thing. You know, you see an increase with prices in housing. So you get businesses here, great. You get some good jobs, but now your housing price has gone up. There's places like Eden Village that have been out there to assist people who are in bad situations. But it's what I recently found out, trying to help a friend of mine find a place. He's in a situation right now with his wife or his girlfriend and two kids. They only do single people. So I'm, you know, trying to talk to him about Good Shepherd House, things like that. But I have not heard a good definition of affordable housing yet. I don't think anybody can say what it is, what programs are out there to assist people. And then, you know, when you're looking for money to assist people, you're taking one hand and putting in the other. So, you know, you're pretty much back to square one. I've had a friend of mine reach out with some ideas using some money that's out there that the city and county have their hands on. I'm not going to go into details because I have not sat down with him yet to really look into it. But what he has put out there and shown me is very simple. And you know, lack of better terms, it's so simple it's stupid. So I'm hoping maybe that's going to give us a direction to go.
Certainly, I do think homelessness is sometimes treated as a separate issue, but it's all kind of housing. Mm-hmm. I think when we're talking about affordable housing, a lot of times, at least in our newsroom, we're talking about the kind of thing that would be affordable for a nurse, a young police officer, mm-hmm. Someone who's been working in the service industry.
Yes.
Someone making, let's say, $30,000 to $60,000 a year.
All right. So when I first got hired at the police department in 1995, $100,000 was, you know, that was a lot of money. Not that it's not a lot of money now. I'd love to have $100,000. Places out in the county that were getting built up, White Road, I can't remember the name of that area. But, you know, houses in there were selling for about $100,000, $100,000, $110,000. You know, at the time when I got hired, I was making $20,782 a year. My paycheck was about $652 every 2 weeks. Now I see these officers coming in, nurses, first responders. They're making $50,000 starting out, maybe. And the pretty much the low end, so the $100,000 back when I was in 1995 is now $300,000.
For a house, yeah.
For a house.
Yeah.
And even trying to find a $300,000 house in the city limits, good luck. It is difficult. It is really difficult. And sometimes when you run across those houses, a lot of them need work on them. The city has the HOPS program. I used the HOPS program when I first bought my house in 99. It worked okay. But again, that's money that's there, but it goes pretty quick. Hmm. The other thing, too, is when you look at Novant or these area hospitals, they have a lot of travelers coming in. Those travelers are making double what the person that lives in the area is making. So, you know, how do you figure that out? I would love to see that people living here in the area have better pay so they can afford stuff. And why is it that someone who works for the city of Wilmington or actually even works for the county, why is it they can't afford to live in this town? It makes no sense. A lot of times if you live where you work or work where you live, there's a little more pride in what happens. You know, things happen, you step up, you say things, or you call somebody and say, hey, look, I see this is happening. Can we get this handled? You know, you go into any neighborhood and stuff gets stolen, they don't call and report it. Because, well, first I call the cops, takes 45 minutes to get here. Or it was just a lawnmower I only paid $25 for. I'm definitely getting off topic there. My apologies.
No, right. So I want to go back to something you were talking about, you know, a friend who's in a difficult situation. Lots of people experiencing mm-hmm. that right now. What is your take on what would your approach be to homelessness in Wilmington?
Good Shepherd House has done a lot. They're full. 411 Red Cross. I forgot the name of that, but it's full. Salvation Army's, they're almost done building that facility. I know it's probably going to be full before anybody, you know, before they even open their doors. I don't have the answer. I was approached a couple of mornings ago, right, walking to the gym. I had these two homeless guys walk up on me, but you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning and wanting money. And I was like, you know, don't walk up on somebody at 5 o'clock in the morning in a dark area. Because it was hardly any lights out. I depend on smarter people than me. I think, you know, of course, our churches, civic groups, anything that anybody can do to help someone that's homeless improve, great. I do know, talking with some homeless people, some of them, that's just how they want to live. I'm not saying all of them. And some of them have mental issues, and they can't do the hospital setting. There's more therapeutic for them to be out on their own. I'm not saying all of them are like that. Some of them, or a good percentage of them, want to be somewhere they can lay their head. Around the lake.
I know what you mean. There's
the housing there.
Lakeside
and
Village.
I know a gentleman that stays there. He's been staying there a few years. He loves it. It's one room apartment, kitchenette, but it's what he needs to lay his head. And, he has some work that he does. Yeah, you look at areas like Raleigh, and because you look at folks out here panhandling, and that's a big topic people are talking about. They're standing on the corner. I mean, you pull up on the corner. A lot of times those corners are very nasty, very dirty. I've only seen one gentleman, and I've not yet been able to get out and talk to him. I'm fairly certain he's homeless, but he's the only gentleman I ever see going out there and picking up the trash. He picks up the trash near these gas stations and throws it away. Areas like Raleigh, at one point, I think they're still doing it, or Wake County, if somebody wants to panhandle, they have to pay for like a permit, and they have to wear a yellow vest. Is that putting an extra burden on them? Maybe. Is it putting a burden on the person that pulls up? They know what that homeless person is sitting there asking for money. They're able to identify them. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer of how to handle it. At one point in time, there was an agency nearby in a neighboring state that would, once they had homeless people in the area, they would give a bus pass, send them here to Wilmington.
I've heard those stories, yeah.
And those stories are true.
So I want to ask another question about housing, and this is, I think, something you've posted online about, and that is development.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly see from all parts of the political spectrum some frustration mm-hmm. with the way development has unfolded in this region. Wilmington's pretty built out. There's about 3% buildable space left. But what would your approach to development in Wilmington be?
We need to slow our roll. I mean, it has got to – you build these apartments, and the newest thing that I've seen, they're building the townhouses, 17th and Independence. Those are rentals. People are like, I want this to be like Charleston. I want to be this like this city. Well, this is Wilmington, North Carolina. The other cities have their own thing. Let's think about where we are and how we're doing it. With all the extra building, our infrastructure is trying to catch up. About every other day, you're looking, you're riding down the road, you're seeing the road closed because CFPUA is out there having to fix something. You're seeing boil water advisories. We have one of the highest crash rates in the state. At one point, Wilmington actually topped the fatality rates for wrecks, for crashes. And it might still be back up there. So with all this building, bringing all these, everybody coming in, that's great. We've got to slow our roll. We've got to slow down. You're getting rid of all of your green space. I remember as a kid growing up, 17th Street wasn't there. You could take your little four-wheel drives and drive back through it. There was a pass back there you could go through and actually enjoy the area. And, of course, some other high school kids might have done some other things out there. Of course, I wouldn't have gone out there and had a beer or anything like that. That would have been illegal back then. Anyway, hint, hint. We got to slow down. People coming in, great. How are we going to handle it? You got to handle the infrastructure first. You got to have the people to even handle what's coming in. You don't have enough. You don't have enough first responders or anything to handle the folks that are coming in. You don't have enough. You don't have enough probably staff at the hospitals to handle the people that are coming in. I can't tell you. Well, the staffing at the hospital is kind of obvious because they're bringing in everybody from outside to come and work. Some areas you see them, some places you see where, okay, if you're going to build, let's take a slower approach to it. If you're going to build, you need to have this much space per house. You need to make sure you leave these trees. One of the places that was built up near Castle Hayne, when the family sold the land, they actually had it written out, said, before you cut down any trees, you have to let us know. And they went in there, and when somebody wants to build a house, it's okay, yeah, cut down these trees, keep the rest. Keeping the trees out there, Some people might think, okay, you know, trees, big deal. Trees are what keep you cool in the summertime. I mean, you know, when you're out there and it's hot, walking underneath some shade is some of the best feeling in the world. And you feel that 10-degree drop. And to me, it's therapeutic. I enjoy that. I grew up down near the water. I spent a lot of my time in areas that were, you know, wooded and, you know, a lot of trees. For yanking that away is making the town basically look like just some flat top. Ideas of building more like type high rise or, you know, larger dwelling areas or dwelling spaces for people to come and stay. That may be a good idea. But then you think about your skyline. You know, how do you want this town to look? Do you want to look busy? Do you want to look at, you know, what do people want? You know, people want money. People want benefits. They want, you know, everybody wants everything. I mean, and me, of course, I mean, I want everything too. But, I mean, there's a line you got to draw.
So talking about people want money. I want to talk about economic development for a minute. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things the city has invested in a number of different ways. There's the PPD incentive program. There was the Live Oak incentive program. There's been public-private partnerships like River Place, and their attempted projects at the North End. You know, what is and I've heard, you know, we've heard from liberals and conservatives alike that some people are uncomfortable mingling public money with private money. Some people think it's a good way to spur development. So how do you see that kind of thing?
All right. If you're going to mingle public and private money, to me, you need some type of third-party oversight. I mean, then I'm not talking like you need to get an IRS agent in here. I'm talking about somebody that, you know, again, you're probably going to have to pay them, but you need some type of oversight. You need somebody that's going to be in the weeds, look at it. You know, that's a big thing. Because to me, you know, when you got too many hands in a pot, and nobody's looking, you know, stuff disappears. I'm not saying that's happened. I'm just saying that's what tends to happen. I'm in favor of business. I'm in favor of, you know, you want to start a business, that's great. I'm in favor of the fact that you want to go out here and start something that no one else has done or do something everybody else is doing. That's fine. With the economic development, bringing in companies, that's a great thing. Live Oak. Live Oak was good. I agree. It has been nice. But have you tried to, I've gone online looking at tickets, and it's outrageous. You know, you want to buy a ticket, it's outrageous going, you know, to go in there. Wilson Center is pretty much outrageous as well. Now, some people kind of get around the Live Oak thing. They kind of walk around the Riverwalk.
Hey, as long as you keep moving.
As long as you keep moving. But I thought Live Oak was a pretty good idea. I mean, that is a good spot to Azalea Festival, you know, River Fest. Maybe we ought to move all that down there. I don't know. Keep downtown open for the local vendors.
I know some local vendors who would appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got a lot of space. It's cleaned up rather nicely. People are keeping an eye on it. It's a good spot. What is it actually bringing to us? What are the numbers? I mean, did the city council at one point, I guess they all had season tickets out there that I think the city was paying, you know, they were writing off like,
yes, they had box
20-something grand a year, 30 grand a year.
They had box seats at one point.
Yeah. I don't know if they still do that or not. But
I think they walked away from that.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Yeah, because I wasn't, when you brought it up, I had just thought about that. I didn't know if that was still a thing or not.
I think they got a little bit embarrassed.
Well, I could see that. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'd be embarrassed too. Yeah, I'd be embarrassed like, hey, you know, let's spend all this money getting this thing up here and running. We're going to give you this box seat so you can go show off. That's not me. I mean, I'd rather be down in the pit with everybody. I'm not saying slam dancing, but, you know, I'd like to be down with everybody hanging out.
I want to ask another question about the economy, and that's, you know, Wilmington has some pockets of very affluent mm-hmm. people. People have been very successful. And some other parts of town where people have not been as successful. Mm-hmm. And that breaks along racial lines sometimes, not always.
Yeah, it does.
And so one question we get a lot is, you know, does the city have a role in addressing that kind of economic and sometimes racial inequality? And if so, what does that role look like?
Hmm. All right. Working the street like I did years ago, there was areas of town that, yeah, it was mostly African-American, you know, Caucasian, you know, Hispanic, or Latino population was moving in. There were pockets. People going in and buying up, you know, dilapidated houses. They fix them up. It's in the downtown area or in the downtown overlay. And they might have bought it from the lady for, or the man for, you know, $120,000. They go in and they drop another $100,000, and now they're selling that house for $400,000. So everything in that area is going up. Now, for the folks who are able to sell or need to sell, it might be a good thing. I don't know. I don't know their situation. I'm just saying, all right, let's hypothetically say it's a good thing for them. They want to get out of town anyway. They want to take that money they're making. They want to move out west where they can buy a lot more land, pay everything off, and just start anew. You look at the people who are buying those properties and fixing them up, and you look at the people who are actually buying them, and you do see a big divide in where their political stances are. That's one thing. The other thing, I also remember there was a detective that I used to work with. His mother lived on Fifth Avenue, and again, it was back late 90s. She had to move because she couldn't afford to pay the tax on the house anymore. You know, that, I mean, to me, and I still think about that. I mean, it breaks my heart. Here's this lady that lived here in that area for probably 40 years and then just got to the point she couldn't handle it anymore. There is a divide. You see it. The only time I never see a divide, you go to a military town, and everybody you go to every neighborhood you go to, it's kind of nice. You step out there, you see everybody, and you see everybody out there playing and kicking around. I'm off track.
So there is a divide. I mean, do you think is there some place or some way you would like to see the city, you know, work on that?
I don't think it's really up to the city. I think it's up to the citizens. Me, one of the things I'd like to see a lot more of your religious groups get together again and talking and sitting down. You know, growing up, you messed up down the road. You might not know the person that you're messing around the flower bed. You're a kid. You're tearing it up or whatever. You might not know that person, but they know your family, and you know they're calling and making things right. Or, you know, saying this is what's going on, and then your family's having to make things right. I would like to see a lot more, and that's, you know, that's the Christian community, that's the Jewish community, the Muslim community. You know, I want to see everybody working together. There's somebody who needs to take point on getting everybody together to sit down and say, okay, how are we going to make things better for everybody? I joked around with Kevin Spears at one point a couple years ago. I said, I think we ought to start wearing hats again. You walk down the street and you tip your hat to people. I mean, to show them that, you know, show them some respect. You know, the big thing with BLET now is just they're making sure that these officers understand that you got to give people a voice every now and then. Just let them get it out, get it over with. You got to, you know, approach things a lot differently. It is a no-brainer. And I hate the fact that we're having to make sure that people understand that. But I think people have gotten away from the fact that, you know, I've only met you, one time, Ben, I believe. I think we've actually stood in front of each other and spoke one time. But I got all the respect in the world for you. I can tell you right now, I hardly listen to your podcast stuff. I hardly do. But I got a lot of respect for you. I've got a friend of mine that moved to West Africa. African-American guy. I got a lot of respect for him. You know, I have friends in the Jewish community. I got a lot of respect for them. The whole idea of just having just a respect for each other, respect for your views, my views, don't push your views on me. I'm not going to push my views on you. You know, coined a phrase, Rodney King, you know, can we all just get along? And it's not hard to get along. You sit there and look back and think about, okay, when did you start seeing these divides? It might have been when people started putting political signs out in the front yard. It used to be you kept your views to yourself, and it was between you, your conscience, and that voting booth is how you voted. You know, the religious groups. Many times I've sat with different religious groups, especially like imams and a couple of rabbis and some of the Christian community. And it's like, no matter who you are, or what you follow, when you close your eyes at night, if you follow a religion, when you close your eyes at night and you pray, we're all praying to the same entity. I'll put it that way. We're all talking to the same. If people maybe would start remembering that, maybe they'll start treating each other a little bit differently or a little bit better. I'm not saying differently. I don't want to treat anybody differently. I want you to treat me like I treat you. Again, the whole golden rule. I think the city should support the idea of bringing groups together. And I'm not saying a round table. I'm just saying, go out and cook a pot of rice and everybody sit around and eat rice together. Or cook something or some, or, this religious group says, hey, this is what we're making today. Everybody comes over and hangs out. And just, you get to know each other. If you, and that's the other thing too, working through the years in law enforcement, working in the street, you'd have these neighbors calling on each other. The dog's barking. Okay. Well, do you know your neighbor? Yeah. Well, why don't you call your neighbor? Well, that's not my job. What's wrong if you call your neighbor and say, hey, look, your dog's barking, it's waking me up in the middle of the night. Is everybody that scared to reach out to their neighbor, their friend, and say, hey, look, there's something not right here. There's something wrong. Can you help me out?
I think in some cases, yeah, I think people are afraid of that.
It could have been a lot of like TV shows like Fear Thy Neighbor and stuff. That might not.
Yeah, it might not help. So you've brought it up a couple of times, and I know this is something that you're passionate about. So I want to ask you about public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And what your take is on where the Wilmington Police Department is now. You can take this where you want to go, but we get questions about oversight. We get questions about recruiting and retaining, about morale, about policing style. So what are your thoughts on the WPD?
Well, I've been a little vocal on it. I will tell you right now, so your minimum staffing is about 280. The PD right now is around like 230. We should be up around, the police department should be up around 320, 330. So as it is right now, you're already maybe 50 to 60 below minimum staffing. Now let's talk about minimum staffing. What does that encompass? You report a crime. Officer comes out, takes a report. Let's say it's something that can be investigated. It goes up to the Criminal Investigation Division. When I was in CID, Criminal Investigation Division, when I first started in 2000, October 2000, I think it was 21 detectives there. You're looking at 11 right now, and the population has grown since 2000. It's grown the past 25 years. So you're stressing a workforce that is already stressed enough. When I first got hired, the benefits were great, the pay wasn't great. Yeah, it improved. But it seems like every time officers, first responders, anybody around here gets a raise, it usually gets a raise, but guess what else goes up? Your insurance goes up as well. So that raise of, hey, you might look and say, well, these officers got a 3% raise. But yeah, their insurance went up a couple $100, and so that 3% raise, they're actually coming out of pocket $15 to cover the insurance. I know the fire department. I mean, a lot of agencies are seeing their numbers dwindle, and they're starting to pick back up. I know Wilmington PD's lost people to Leland. Leland pays well. They don't. If I remember correctly, speaking to a couple of them, they're not paying their guys overtime. But they say, this is your shift. You come in and work your shift. When it's time to get off, it's time to get off. So, you can look at it like, well, I need to hang over and handle this. And sometimes you might have to hang over to handle something, I'm sure. And they probably adjust. Again, I can't speak a lot for Leland, but I'm just saying what I can gather. If you're only working 40 hours a week, that's great. If you're being told that, we're so short on the street. Hey, you normally work CID. You normally work advice. You normally work housing. You normally work, you know, you work in another area, but we need you to work the street to help cover other shifts. So now I'm forcing you to work extra. And, you know, people need the time off. You know, the average person experiences, what, 8-10 stressful events in their lifetime, or, you know, or some type of catastrophic event. You know, a cop, a fireman, a nurse, a doctor, make sure EMS. I mean, they're in the hundreds by the time they retire. This in the hundreds. It's probably up close to 1,000 that they've had to deal with, and it does pay a toll on you. It does pay a toll. State of North Carolina, if you're an officer and you get hired when you're 21, that's a 30-year retirement. And I tell students all the time, you need to think about it. 30 years, that's not a job. That's a sentence when it comes to this. When you're seeing the same thing over and over again. Like a friend of mine, when he retired, he figured out he needed to retire because when he saw a child that had been hacked up and it didn't bother him, he said, it's time for me to retire. Hmm. And to hear him say that just, it really struck a chord with me. I think anybody that would hear him say that, it would strike a chord with.
Yeah.
You know, trying to retain these folks, you know, what do? Do you bump the pay up? Okay, great, bump the pay up. You know, give them better benefits. The city got away from the 401k program. If you're hired after a certain date, you know, they're not contributing as much to 401k. I didn't pay into Social Security while I was at the police department because they had their own retirement system with the 401k system. It worked for me. It might not work for somebody else. Figuring out how to get the pay up for these folks. Morale is slowly improving. People still call and talk to me. It's slowly improving. Morale would be better to get more people in there to help out. But at the rate that people are leaving and have left, you're now getting officers that are coming in and getting trained by an officer that might only have a couple years of experience. And I'm not picking on that officer with two or three years of experience. They've seen a lot. But would you rather be trained by somebody who's been there 12 years or somebody who's been there two?
Well, we hear this concern, not just with the police department, but with the hospital, is, again, no disrespect to a nurse who's been working 3 years. She's probably seen stuff.
Yeah.
He's seen stuff I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
But there is an institutional knowledge that's been eroded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I will say, and I'm picking on some of my doctor friends out there, I listen to a nurse a lot faster sometimes than I will a doctor.
Fair enough. So last policy question I want to ask is about public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
If you followed along at home, it's been a bumpy ride for WAVE.
Mm-hmm.
The county was in, the county was out, the county's back in now. There are some people who are, you know, WAVE does what it needs for them to do. There are some people who probably can't get to work using it.
Yeah.
What's your take on it? Do you think it's doing all right? Would you like to see it change? How do you feel about it?
I'd like to see more places for people to get picked up and dropped off. I mean, that would be great. Public transportation around here, it's fair, all right? And the people that do that job are great folks, you know? They work their tails off. The folks that do the $4 trips, they go out to a house, like if somebody's in a wheelchair, has an issue, they can't, you know, move like everybody or everyone else, or they have some type of disability or something that's impairing them from going to work. You know, they do have the bus that comes out, and the person gets out, helps them get on the bus, and it's a $4 trip each way. Yeah, that's great. It'd be nice if you did that for everybody. However, you know, can't do it for everybody. Maybe better staging areas throughout town. Trying to figure out how to get people to those staging areas. Do you ask for volunteers? Of course, when you ask for volunteers, they got to worry about insurance for those volunteers. So it's you go to bigger cities, but we're not a very big city. You know, you go to a bigger city, you got better transit, you got you may got rails and things like that, but we are not there. I don't think we're ever going to be there by the way things are already laid out, but there needs to be something. There needs to be a way for more people to get access to transportation. right now, I only can think of is, you know, setting up better areas for them to go to, better staging areas, where, like, you know, when you go down Third Street, that whole area they did, it looks great. But could you move something, you know, could you partner with UNCW and say, okay, you know, can we get a spot where you can stage up? And no, UNCW, I'm not asking for that. I'm just making a suggestion or thinking of an idea. Down towards Monkey Junction, you know, it was an area down there that people could stage up a little bit better. Well, my youngest daughter talks about wanting to move to another city because of public transportation. She doesn't like driving here. I don't blame her. But she would like to go somewhere the transportation a little bit better. I hate the idea she wants to go, but I totally get it.
All right, last question that we have, because you're running for mayor, which in Wilmington is kind of a councilman with a gavel. But there are some things the mayor, some things the mayor can do that a council person might not be able to do. They have a certain level of prestige. They kind of have a bully pulpit. So what I want to ask all the mayoral candidates, including you, is, you know, what would you do with that little bit extra that the mayor's office brings?
Well, you said bully pulpit.
Yeah.
See, I don't like a bully. That's one thing about me. I hate a bully.
Well, you get a platform then. Put it that way.
Okay.
You've got a platform to speak to the public.
Okay. You need to be as positive as possible with people. You know, positivity goes a long way. But you also got to tell folks when things are bad. This whole word of transparency gets thrown around. And it's not transparent. Like people won't. I think that position needs to be, when something goes on, it needs to be, once it's vetted, you know, whatever personnel matter, whatever, it needs to be addressed within the public somehow. It needs to be shown that, you know, you want to have confidence in your government, you want to have confidence in your mayor, you want to have confidence when, you know, that new cop or that old cop pulls up, you want to have confidence when that fireman pulls up. I want to have confidence when you pull up and ask questions. I want to have confidence and what's out there. And maybe that position maybe to help establish more confidence with people, with the community. I mean, yeah, I joke around when I teach interview and interrogations. I point at the wall in the back of the room and say, look, I'll go back there and talk to that wall and make it talk back. But, you know, I think getting out there, talking to people, you know, having open communication. The postings that I have done, people responding, they make comments. I said, tell me more. I want to hear this. You know, somebody brought up the Doe Project. A friend of theirs had, the gentleman that started the project passed away, but the Doe Project is still ongoing. It's up in a northern city, I think maybe New York area. But you're reading it, I like the ideas behind it, and it does depend a lot more on private sector to help out with homelessness. With people that need help. You know, are there deep pockets here? Yes, there are. You know, do I have deep pockets? Nope. And yes, I'm a realtor, and people have been talking to me about that too. I help one or two people at a time. I'm not a developer. I'm not 100% against developing, but we need to slow our roll. We need to slow down. And I think, you know, for people to come in and, you know, kind of like just an impromptu poll, and you're listening to folks, you're out there in the community, you're talking to them, you know, get up there and say, hey, this is what the people are saying. You know, you've got Joe Blow up here spilling out, hey, this is what I want to do for the city. But then you have the citizens, and no matter who they are, I don't care about your race, no matter who they are saying, I don't like that idea because this is what's happened before. And, you know, people need to listen to that. You do learn a lot from history. You need to reflect on it sometimes to figure out, okay, how are we going to push forward? How are we going to make this work? That bridge that's sitting over there, that as soon as that bridge was put in back in the 60s, late 60s, it was obsolete. You can't get a ship under it at certain times of the day. Yeah, you have to, a lot of times, sometimes some of those ships that would go to the old DuPont terminal, they had to go in at low tide because once that bridge was raised up, it would barely make it under, but they had to do everything at low tide. So, you know, again, look back and say, okay, think ahead, how are we going to fix this? And I depend on people who respond to me. I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'll tell you that in a heartbeat. I depend on other people saying, hey, here's an idea, and let's sit down and let's figure this idea out. Ask folks. Reach out to the community and say, who's smart with this? Who knows how to do it? Who's dealt with this before? Let them step up and say, this is what I've done before. Do you want to help us out? You know, do you want your name on this project? Do you want to be recognized? That's about, you know, we might not be able to pay, but you want to be recognized for helping? You know, and there's a lot of retired folks around here that have just a wealth of knowledge. And they said, yeah, I've got an idea. Here you go. Well, let's figure it out. Let's work it together. I think a lot of times that we're behind as a nation on like development. When I'm talking about development, let's say technology and stuff like that. Because everybody wants to get together and put a group together and talk about it first. You go to these other countries, like, well, build it. Let's build it and try it out. If it doesn't work, all right, let's fix it. And they tweak it and tweak it and tweak it until it works. Whereas here, it's still in a committee meeting on, you know, what they're going to do.
We are very good at bureaucracy sometimes.
Yeah, you know, so when I worked there at the FBI, one of the bosses over there said, it's not called Bureau, the middle name of Bureau for no reason. I mean,
right.
And he would also say something like, we're using yesterday's technology tomorrow. And, you know, there's a lot of.
I like that one, actually. So let me ask you, anything else that you would want to share with folks?
You know, I don't know. Like I said, this is my first time being in front of a microphone, talking to somebody like this about these issues. I'm sure I didn't sound like the most learned individual. you know, I care about what happens here. I care about everybody here. And believe it or not, you know, again, some people say, well, you're a cop, you're a realtor. Yeah, I also have my private investigator's license, you know. I also like fishing every now and then. I've got a puppy I'm trying to train, you know. I've got kids that went to the schools here that graduated from Hanover High School. And one up, or actually both of them were there when they had the shooting up on the catwalk. Mm. You know, and I mean, you know, it's just so, and I've had conversations like, well, what are we going to do about the schools? Well, what can you do about the schools? Our schools around here are open campuses. And so the only thing that I ask folks, if you got an idea, reach out to me. You know, I'm doing this for a reason. I'm not doing it for me. Really, I'm not. I have done everything I can through the years to serve. You know, I don't do any volunteer stuff, but my wife will tell you that my phone not rings constantly, but people always ask me these questions, calling up, you know, young officers calling that I taught, said, hey, look, I've had this situation happen. My friend that's having the issues right now trying to find a place, he's calling me up. Other people in the community say, hey, look, I saw this happen, or look, I had this interaction with this officer. This is what occurred. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not what needs to happen. You need to go, you either need to go file a complaint or you need to go talk to the supervisor. You need to get this handled. I like helping people. It might sound corny, but actually helping somebody is actually what makes me feel good. Not, you know, drink a bunch of beer or do anything else stupid, but you know, actually helping somebody is what makes me feel good. Is what, and I think if you help somebody else, it's kind of like the movie Pay It Forward. You help somebody, and they see it a little bit later, like, well, you know, somebody helped me, I want to help them. Giving somebody an idea. In the gas station last night, this young lady had this, I'll tell you, that was a neat nose ring, and I asked her about it. It was something she made, and I said, why aren't you making those? She goes, I never thought about that. So I'm helping her. We're pulling up trying to find some AI platforms that she could do the designs. I know a jeweler that retired. I'm trying to get them together. And maybe she could start her own little business. But I like the idea. I like trying to solve problems, not trying to make them. I was once told my personality, I have a type C personality. I didn't understand what that meant, but I'm the person that kind of steps back, watches things, try this objective. But I also try to keep everybody out of trouble. Because I don't like trouble. I don't want to see trouble happen. You can stop at the beginning. You know, I've seen through the years, not saying here, but, oh, there's this guy, he's drunk, he's about to get in the car, let's let him drive and we're going to stop him. No, run up and stop that guy before he gets in the before he gets in the car. You run up and stop him. Don't let him get in the car and drive off. Go ahead and stop him. You know, say you're not going to arrest somebody for a DWI. Well, guess what? You stopped him from doing making that mistake in the first place. So just, you know, big thing, give me a chance. Reach out to me. Ask me questions. Yeah, if you want to find my Facebook page, it's Billy Craig for City of Wilmington Mayor. I think that's right. Sorry, I've only written it about 1,000
we'll
times.
We'll have a link to your page on the site. Well, Billy Craig, candidate for Wilmington Mayor. Thank you.
It's just Billy.
Billy.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, Billy Craig, I mean, that's how I introduce myself to everybody, and I always have, but it's just plain Billy.
Billy, candidate for Wilmington Mayor. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, sir. It was good to see you.
That was our interview with challenger Billy Craig, who is running for mayor of Wilmington. And just a quick note, after our interview concluded, Craig added that he wanted to add whistleblower protection to the city of Wilmington's employment policies, noting that it had to him become apparent that employees who speak out are retaliated against and that they needed a safe entity where they can voice their concerns without fear of retaliation. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening to this special edition of The Newsroom, and check out our other candidate interviews at whqr.org or wherever you get The Newsroom as a podcast.